Ready to ride the waves or hit the road for less? Refinance your boat or motorcycle loan with CME and let them try to beat your rate by 1.5% APR. Enjoy no payments for 90 days and rates as low as 6.25% APR. It's never been easier to lower your rate and free up cash. So make the smart move. Refinance with CME today. Terms and conditions apply. Minimum floor rate of 6.25% APR. Federally insured by NCUA. Visit CMEFCU.org. For additional details. At CME, many of their team members are certified financial counselors trained to help you budget smarter, tackle debt, and build a plan for your financial goals. They offer free, confidential support exclusively for CME members with real-world guidance. So whether you're starting from scratch or need a plan for a specific financial journey, CME certified financial counselors are here to help. No judgment, just support. Let's move forward together. Terms and conditions apply. Federally insured by NCUA. Visit CMEFCU.org. For additional details.
Welcome everyone to Redacted on this Tuesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we try to cover the news, or the stories that the mainstream media largely ignores. And we'd love to hear where you're joining us from. Let us know around the world where you're joining us from in the chat. Tonight on the show, we're going to be looking at the war in Ukraine. We have a special guest. Scott Ritter is going to be joining us with the very latest there because Vladimir Putin basically launching a devastating attack against the Ukrainian army, what's left of it. And this is all... I'll ask you guys in the chat, is this NATO's plan actually to destroy what's left of Ukraine by forcing them to launch a massive, massive armored attack when they don't have any human beings or armor left to attack with? It's all NATO's plan. So we'll get to the bottom of that.
Plus, a new bill in the Senate would create a new federal agency to censor speech on social media. Lawmakers just can't help themselves. We're going to break down this new law.
Also, we're going to look at the southern border tonight with a bombshell story from Muckraker. We have the owner, the lead journalist from Muckraker on with an unbelievable story about the blueprint that illegal immigrants are using to infiltrate the United States. Literally, the documents that show them exactly how to navigate the system and how to infiltrate the United States. We're going to walk through those documents with our special guest. We have that and so much more as Redacted starts right now. Welcome, everybody. Hope everyone's doing well on this Tuesday. So glad to see you. It is August. Can you believe it's August? I feel like it's the dog days of summer right now.
It definitely is. And yeah. I'm doing that merging my words game, too. I guess we're all just a little tired being in the middle of the summer. But we're here. We have another month until the kids go back to school. We're doing the thing. We're doing the damn thing, Clayton. Nice. Thank you for doing the damn thing with us. We're so glad you're here from wherever you are, Germany, Puerto Rico, Little Big Spring, Texas.
Thanks. Someone said, nice mascara, Clayton. I don't have mascara on. I don't wear makeup.
No, but your eyelashes do actually flutter against the glass
of
your
glasses. I have giant eyelashes.
Yeah, this is a Morris family trait.
It's a Morris family trait. So all of my kids have these eyelashes, and she's super jealous of it. And I'm like, what do I care about eyelashes? She's like, don't you know how important those are for ladies? I'm like, well, I'm not a lady.
Lashes are very big right now.
But I'm not wearing mascara. Just to be FYI, I don't wear any makeup.
I'm not wearing a mascara either.
This is my natural glow. This is my natural beauty. Hey, we have a daily newsletter that we would love for you to subscribe to because it hopefully brings you a ton of value every morning. We have people tell us it's their favorite newsletter to get first thing in the morning because they can read it in about 5 or 10 minutes. It gives you great news updates and it's free, totally free, but it's our way to stay connected with you. God knows these platforms love to censor us, we've been banned and blocked 4 times on these platforms. And people would write, thank God we had a newsletter because we could send a newsletter out and say, hey, we were banned again. Here's what's going on. But anyway, beyond that, the newsletter is great. All you need to do is go to redacted.inc. It's not .com. It's .inc. Put in your email address. Then you will receive a welcome email from me, just Clayton at redacted.inc. And then, you have to confirm it. You just have to, you might wind up in your spam folder or your junk folder. Just confirm it. And then tomorrow morning, first thing in the morning, you will receive the newsletter over your cup of coffee. And like I said, you can read it in about 5 or 10 minutes. So again, here's how to sign up. Just go to redacted.inc. Again, redacted.inc. While President Biden is relaxing on a beach in Delaware for the next 9 days, the threat of nuclear war seems more real than ever before. According to reports, NATO countries actively discussing open war with Russia. The former president of Russia, Dmitry Medvedev, saying that there's no other way out right now, it appears, other than a nuclear response if Ukraine doesn't knock it off with all of these drone strikes inside Moscow. It seems a number of dozens of drone strikes overnight continuing to hit, trying to hit targets inside of Moscow and in Crimea. Russia says it shot down a number of these. Zelensky says the war, though, is now coming to Russia. So is he right or is he totally delusional? For that, let's ask former U.S. Marine, former U.N. Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter on that question. Is he right, Scott, that the war is now coming to Russia, or is he delusional?
Well, it depends on what your definition of war is. Zelensky, if his definition of war is limited to acts of terrorism, then Zelensky is correct. Terrorism has come to Russia. Ukraine is able to carry out a number of attacks that qualify as acts of terrorism. They're not acts of war. Sending drones off to strike apartment buildings in Moscow has zero military impact, none whatsoever. It does, fulfill a desire on the part. This is something that was stated by Mikhail Podolyak, there it is. I have trouble with names sometimes. Podolyak, he's an advisor to the president of Ukraine, and he's laid out what Ukraine's path towards victory is. He says, look, we're going to carry out this counteroffensive. We're going to take the city of Melitopol. We're going to sever the land bridge between Crimea and Russia. We're going to bring pain to Russia, cause a collapse of the Russian military effort, which will lead to a collapse of the domestic political situation in Russia, which will lead to the removal of Vladimir Putin from office. That's the goal. One element of collapsing the morale of the Russian people are these attacks. The idea is that by attacking Moscow, you make the Russian people feel insecure. You make the Russian people start to doubt the wisdom of their leadership for getting them involved in a special military operation. This is the Ukrainian objective, but it's not war. It's an act of terrorism. It's acts of violence designed to achieve a political end, not a military end. It's having no impact. If the Ukrainians think that the Russians are going to lose the will to fight because a handful of drones have blown out the windows in a couple Moscow high-rise apartments, They're wrong. But what it is doing is undermining the legitimacy of Zelensky's cause. If they want to say that their purpose is to evict Russian forces from Ukraine, then they should focus on doing just that. But carrying out these attacks, it's not an act of war. War hasn't come to Russia. Russian defense industry is not being interdicted. Russian command and control facilities inside the Russian depth are not being interdicted. Russian lines of communication, strategic lines of communication inside Russia, they're not being interdicted. That's what war would do.
Right.
Zelensky's blowing up buildings with civilians in it. That's not war. That's terrorism.
The Defense Intelligence Agency for the United Kingdom today issued a report, an intelligence update on Ukraine and the war, and said the increased chance of being compelled to fight, drone attacks on Moscow, exceptional level of domestic repression, and the recent Wagner mutiny combined to highlight the Russian state's failure to insulate the population from the war. So basically saying that Putin has failed, that now there's nothing really that Russia can do to keep war away from the inside of the Russian borders. What do you make of this UK intelligence report? Same, I guess, on the response of the Zelensky side?
Well, I think we have to understand that Zelensky is a de facto agent of British intelligence. We've known this for a long time now. He's been beholden to the British. He takes his orders from the British. One only has to remember Boris Johnson's intervention back in March of 2022 to prevent the Ukrainians from going along with a ceasefire agreement that would have brought peace, would have ended the war, saved them hundreds of thousands of lives. But because his British master said jump, he said how high. You know, the quote, the battle plan that I spoke of earlier, Mikhail Poldiak's battle plan, it was written by the British. It's written by the British. They're the ones who wrote it. And so the British intelligence report right now, it's not an intelligence report. It's part of an information warfare campaign that's part and parcel of the Ukrainian government's public articulation of what their objectives are. The two are the same. The British aren't providing intelligence from the sense that you and I might say, which is a unbiased assessment of reality on the ground. The British are engaged in an information warfare campaign designed to undermine the regime of Vladimir Putin in Russia, to create the perception that the Russian government is failing. The problem is the Russian people could care less what the British intelligence report says. They care about what's happening in Russia. If you go to Moscow today, the stores are full. If you go to Moscow today, it's a clean city. It's a thriving city. If you go to Russia today, you'll find the same thing. Unemployment, a growing economy despite massive global sanctions. There's not anybody in Russia who views Putin as a failing leader or a failed leader. Yeah, the Wagner thing was an embarrassment. But it's been resolved. It's over. It's done. The British can continue to try and breathe life into it by mention it, but it's finished. Wagner, there is no more Wagner private military company. It's been closed. There's now the Wagner Group that operates out of Belarus. It has two missions. One is a continued mission in Africa, which it does in concert with the Russian government. The other one is a training advisory mission in Belarus. It's no longer in Ukraine. It no longer has the ability to impose itself on Russian domestic politics. So the British live in sort of a la-la land of their own making. It has nothing to do with reality.
I'll get you out of here on this, Scott, which is the reality on the battlefield right now. While the Western media is focused, at least in part, on these drone strikes, and the Russian response is, there's a real threat of nuclear response if this continues. What is the actual battlefield reality right now for the Ukrainian army?
Well, let's talk about why Medvedev would say something about nuclear weapons at this juncture. He's not threatening the world with nuclear weapons. What he's saying is, do you guys even listen to yourselves for a moment? You're sitting here providing Ukraine with all of this weaponry. Ukraine's asking for more weaponry. For what purpose? Ukraine wants to, you know, break through Russian lines, seize the city of Melitopol, which Russia now views as a Russian city, to cut off Crimea, to create the condition for pushing Russia out of territories Russia says belongs to Russia, Kherson, Zaporizhia, Lugansk, Donetsk, Crimea. And Russia says, don't you understand? That would pose an existential threat to the survival of Russia, and we would have to fall back on our doctrine, which means we're going to nuke you all. We're going to kill everybody, because a world without Russia is not a world worth living in. That's what we said. So everybody who's supporting Ukraine, it's like saying we support swallowing a suicide pill.
Right.
Because they don't understand that a victory by Ukraine would prompt a Russian nuclear response that would kill everybody. So that's what Medvedev's saying. But he isn't saying that Ukraine's winning. He's just scratching his head saying, I don't know why the West continues to double down on stupid and support Ukraine, because if Ukraine were to win, you're all going to die. That's a guarantee, and it is a guarantee. And I think everybody in the West should reflect on that for a moment. Ukraine not only is not going to win, but they can't be allowed to win. Because if Ukraine did win, we're all going to die. And that's a statement, a basic statement, simple statement of fact. But now we come to what's really going on. Look, Ukraine started this counteroffensive around June 8th. They did so using forces that were trained by NATO, equipped by NATO, and they failed miserably. About a week and a half into the counteroffensive, 2 weeks, Ukraine realized it can't sustain this. So they stopped using the tactics that they were trained by NATO. They started using their own adaptations, which were basically infantry-driven, designed to, you know, move forward in small infiltration groups, seize areas, and exploit. They had limited success. They never reached the first Russian defensive line, but they could say, hey, look, we took this village, we took this street, we took this tree line. But they were suffering horrendous casualties. But then the Vilnius summit came, and NATO put Ukraine on notice. We're not going to sit here and supply you so you can take a house, so you can take a street, so you can take a tree line. You said you wanted to take Melitopol. We gave you equipment that you said you could accomplish that mission, and now you're not doing it. So do you want us to help you or not? And so Ukraine's had to go back to these massed armored assaults. And that's what we're seeing right now. They're sending battalions of armor in to a kill zone where the Russians are decimating them, destroying them. It's mass murder is what's happening on the battlefield right now. They're not going to win, which in a way is good news for the West, because now we don't have to worry about Russia nuking us because Ukraine's not going to achieve its objectives. But it's tragic because right. We are literally sacrificing Ukrainian manpower for our own, you know, I don't know what we get out of it. Do we feel good about this? I have not yet figured out what the West truly wants to accomplish in Ukraine, because right now all that it seems they want to accomplish is the destruction of the Ukrainian nation and the destruction of Ukraine's manpower.
It's supporting democracy, Scott. That's why, you know, I mean, Ukraine is the bastion of democracy. And if you let this bastion of democracy fall, then what hope is there left for the rest of us?
Ukraine has never been democratic in the traditional sense of the word. They may have held at some point in time democratic elections, but these were elections that were controlled by oligarchs, controlled by, wow, it sounds a lot like America, but we won't reflect on that too much. But the fact is today, you know, Zelensky has suppressed free speech. He's suppressed political parties. He governs as a virtual dictator, and yet we're saying this is democracy that we're defending. It's the most corrupt nation on the planet. If we ever did an audit where the $150+ billion that we sent to Ukraine went, we'd be shocked by what we'd find, because you'd see that fully 60 to 70% of that never reached its intended usage. It went into the pockets of these corrupt politicians, including the Ukrainian president.
Well, don't worry. We'll have elections in October in Ukraine to elect new leadership there. Oh, right. No, those elections have been canceled, which is what you do in a democracy. Scott Ritter, great to see you as always. Thank you so much for this and providing an analysis on this nuclear rhetoric, which, of course, the West wants to blow out of proportion. Western media wants to blow totally out of proportion without the nuance here. Scott, thanks so much for this as always. Great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we've got more news to get to here on this Tuesday, and a lot happening around the world that we want to get to. We want to talk about what Congress is planning to do in the United States, which is a bipartisan effort to basically censor social media and curb free speech. It's a bipartisan effort.
Basically, they just want to take the controls. Like, thanks, Mark Zuckerberg. You move aside. Yeah. We're going to handle the controls from here on out.
Also, we're going to look at the U.S. border invasion and the big update there, as new documents have emerged showing the exact blueprint for how to evade authorities and exactly how to infiltrate the United States. We're going to walk you through all of that. Plus, we'll have an update on Haiti and how now we have Kenya, which is offering up thousands of troops for this invasion of Haiti to do Biden's bidding for their invasion of this country.
Oh, we've delegated that one. Okay.
Yeah. Well, he's at the beach. That's what we're doing right now.
Gotcha. All right. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at COVID Tax Relief, because COVIDTaxRelief.org got a small retail business almost $80,000. COVIDTaxRelief.org got a manufacturing business nearly $250,000, and they got a large distribution business almost $900,000. So if you run a business, church, or nonprofit, and you paid your employees through all or part of the pandemic, you can qualify for up to $26,000 per employee through the government's CARES Act. But beware of clickbait or pay up front companies that make you do the work and take a huge percentage of your refund. You guys, we went through a lot during the pandemic. If you did your part, you should figure out if there's a reward for you here. So go to covidtaxrelief.org. They offer a reasonable low commission only after you receive your refund. And with 300 CPAs and tax experts, no one is better at getting you the maximum benefit than covidtaxrelief.org. So once again, visit covidtaxrelief.org because this plan expires soon. That's covidtaxrelief.org. One more time, covidtaxrelief.org. Refund examples are not a guarantee and not all businesses qualify, but check it out. You got nothing to lose. All right. Well, Congress wants social media to be run by the government. I know you're shocked. This comes from a new bill put forward by Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren and Republican Senator Lindsey Graham. Now, what they're calling is this a bipartisan effort to regulate online platforms. But basically, it's they want the controls. They want basically, and you can see who they're after when we look closer in this bill later. They basically want anyone who they can't control right now. Mark Zuckerberg, you know, Elon Musk, that kind of thing. If you are an entrepreneur that owns a social network that they cannot control, they are interested in getting their hands on that. Now, what this would do was establish a new federal commission called the Digital Consumer Protection Commission, and it would have the full power of a federal agency to subpoena documents and witnesses and set standards for content moderation. It's billed as a modification to the Clayton Act of 1914. Do you know what the Clayton Act is?
No, I don't.
It is an antitrust act.
I was going to say, is it awesome?
Well, it's 1914. Sure, I'm sure it is. This bill does show some kind of concern for data and antitrust, but that to me, if you read the bill, is all window dressing. It's, you know, you could write an antitrust bill, sure. You could write a data protection act. You could do those things. We have those things. This is like, yeah, we care about these things, but really censorship and content moderation, that's what we care about. And that's the meat of this. Why do they want this? Well, because they've been caught censoring speech around, oh, so many things lately. Hunter Biden's laptop, COVID. Anything else you can think of that they've been censoring from the Twitter files? I mean, the sky's the limit, right? Treatments to COVID.
Masks.
Masking, all right. Of that kind of thing. The election, talk about one politician over another. So now, since a federal judge recently said they cannot do that anymore, they're making a government agency that could. Last month, the case from the attorneys general lawsuit in Missouri and Louisiana, the judge ruled that the government must stop censoring speech. And the Justice Department is trying to appeal this because they want that power back so bad they can taste it. And in this ruling, we saw all manner of censorship that did happen inside of Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Google, Pinterest. We saw it, you guys. We saw, this is just the Facebook files we saw last week, but rewind the tape of this very show. We have not let one of them slip by because it is important to remember just how much you are punished and controlled from sharing speech, no matter what. So who knows if this new bipartisan effort will pass, but it is basically a carbon copy of what we talked about last May. You may remember this, the Digital Platform Commission Act of 2023. This was something we talked about in May when it was introduced. It would put behavioral codes on users based on the types of things they share, like, oh, you're one of those, anti-masker, or you care about Hunter Biden, that makes you a crazy person, right? Behavioral codes, and give the government full access to police and control every website. This new bill has that too, every website. This previous bill that I'm just reminding you of that we talked in May, it was introduced in the Senate and no movement has happened yet. So they're gonna try again. Now, how is this one different from Elizabeth Warren and Lindsey Graham? It defines social networks as dominant platforms if they have at least 50 million users or 100,000 active users in the U.S. and they are not publicly traded. So again, there's this bit there that says if they have private ownership, they are especially interested in getting control of that because, you know, as we saw from the Facebook files, Mark Zuckerberg and his executives were not exactly comfortable with the censorship that they participated in. Is that cold comfort? I'm going to say, yeah, I did find that a little bit of a cold comfort, not to Congress, though. So if there's like one gatekeeper, they are especially interested in that. Now, if you get designated as a dominant platform, then these companies have to pay a license and pay to keep that license active. And there are very strict wording here about if you have repeat offenses about content moderation, you can have your license revoked. So we saw yesterday in the Facebook files that there was a Biden administration official who had said, I want this removed. And when it wasn't, he was pissed off about it. Well, he wouldn't have to call and scream anymore with this new agency. He could just get them punished. Bang, that's done. You don't have to lose your cool. As we've seen so many times, Twitter was given the business. Facebook was given the business every time they did not comply with a government request. They were screamed at. Well, now they can be punished.
I think, and who's going to be the policing unit of this?
It's a political appointee. So it would be kind of like the Surgeon General, like appointed by the president.
With his or her own staff.
Yes.
Right. So they'd have their own staff of people that would spend all day long basically going through and deciding what they would want to censor.
Yes.
You would have like an office in Washington, D.C., and well, they already do, right? They already do all of this, but now it would be a uniform office that we would know the address, we would know where they get their mail, it wouldn't be a charade anymore. We would know exactly where they are.
Right, but think about it. I can't remember the senators' names now, the ones that specifically wanted the Russian misinformation campaign. Do you remember from the Twitter files? I'm sorry, it escapes me right now. There were two senators that wanted the Twitter files to push the Russiagate bit, right, about certain misinformation plots. And when Twitter refused, they freaked out and went to the press and continued to threaten them and, you know, said Twitter is being irresponsible or what have you. Well, now they wouldn't have to do that because they could correspond directly with this agency to say, these are the topics we're concerned about that you need to go after. And so you could tell, who would be leading who at this point. It would just be government agencies.
Genetic jabber in our chat says they call it the Department of Censorship.
Yeah, that's, yeah. I mean, that's basically what it is.
Yeah.
Now, they want to, what they're saying is that they're going to exist to make sure that social media platforms are transparent. In the screen I just showed you, it says that they need to make sure that there's criteria that the operator employs in content moderation practices. So, like, you know, we just need to know, like, it has to be consistent what it is your content moderating, but it also gives the commission the right to establish the rules. So they're pretending that they just want transparent rules, but no, they want to set rules. Take a look at this. They have rulemaking authority. They can issue such procedural and administrative rules as are necessary to exercise the function of the commission. So, you know, that's nice, but they have rules they want to make. And if the government doesn't think you're following those rules, they can revoke a social media's license. They also limit foreign ownership of social media by what they call foreign adversaries. This is absolutely the anti-TikTok bit, right? If there's an operator that is not a citizen of the United States, we got to work on that. They should not be licensed. This would prevent them from having to remove things like TikTok from the App Store. It just would never be allowed to become a dominant platform. Go ahead, David.
That's going to make it legally binding that now China is an adversary. Like, so it doesn't matter where you fall on that now, it'll legally be an adversary because it's in this document.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting bit because they're saying they're determining foreign adversary just means like someone who's not a United States company that owns a social media platform that's a dominant platform.
Right. I mean, this thing is so vague, right? It's intentionally vague, right? You hit on a key point here, which is like it'll place a vague requirement on the dominant platforms to mitigate harm. Websites are required to mitigate the heightened risk of physical, emotional, developmental, or material harms on the dominant platforms, according to the bill.
Right. And we've talked about many times that this idea that like your mental health is falsely equated with your bodily health, and that if something online is causing you distress, then you can, you can make the equivalency of the fact that that's causing you real harm. So we can police that.
Right. And then, so if the bill empowers the commission to standardize the content, also the moderation content, so there'll be a standard of what speech is.
Well, you know exactly what that will be. It will be no misgendering, period. So if, you know, your instincts tells you that you're talking to a man, but they're dressed in lipstick, you cannot say that that's a man.
So
right?
Like those the Surgeon kind of General of the United States right now.
Which is also a political appointee, but okay.
Right. Like if I want to say, well, that's a biological man, that would be moderated under this new sort of Department of Censorship.
I mean, it's not written as such, but we know that that is the appetite of politicians, is to punish for things like that.
And I guess, you know, we say it's bipartisan, but let's be honest, right? Elizabeth Warren and Lindsey Graham chairing this, they are one party. These are not like the politicians who are going to make changes in this country. It's a uniparty. They are part of one party.
Yeah,
and there's no daylight between Lindsey Graham and Elizabeth Warren on anything. And so this idea, we keep saying it's bipartisan, bipartisan, bipartisan. It's really not. It's really not.
No, they're both neocons.
Essentially. Yeah. You vote for. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Who want to police speech and control actions. Sure. Yeah. I would say they're yin and yang.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, you know, Elizabeth Warren wants to take over our entire money supply, control all of that, control speech. Lindsey Graham wants to invade Mexico. He wants to kill as many Russians as he can. There's no daylight between these guys. And they both vote for the same thing. So it's one party. It's one party. The ruling class, as John says in our chat. Yes, exactly.
All right. That's a good point. And, you know, who is the agency that we saw really acting the most for content moderation? Besides the Biden administration, it was the FBI that's been doing this the most. This bill would give the Justice Department a say in censoring social media. It says this committee will consult with the Justice Department on, you know, right and wrong, good and bad. Now, that's the same department that has been censoring social media all along and now is not supposed to. You know, Senators Warren and Graham are out there talking all kinds of nonsense about why this bill is needed. They're making a shitty argument about it. I know people don't like when I curse, but their argument about it is shitty. It's nonsensical. It's just the New York Times ran it. So they're, you know, using it as like, yeah, we're really going to show social media because some of the problems they say is Google preferences their flight search. Amazon lists things from small businesses. This bill doesn't address any of that. They're just talking like in general about the internet. Like also, you know, if I push command 2, that makes a euro sign. Like it's just stupid. They're just talking about their experience on the internet and then introducing a bill that it is a power grab and an expansion of government with yet another federal agency. It's really dumb. It's one of those things where it just, it's spurious. One thing doesn't address the other. Let me know if you have a different read on this. A link to it was posted in this morning's newsletter. So if you have your newsletter, you have your copy close to your little fingers. Let us know if you think that there's anything good in this bill. I think it's just government expansion, unnecessary, and garbage. But if you disagree with me, let me know.
Yeah, let us know in the chat where you're joining us from. Good to see all of you guys from around the world. Let us know. Nice to see everyone on Rumble and on YouTube. Thank you guys for subscribing and being a part of a show. If you do subscribe to Redacted, your name will pop up here on the big screen. We try to cover a lot of the big world stories that we think are not getting attention, and there's You know, we do four or maybe five segments per show. We can't cover every story in the world, although we'd like to. Everything from Trudeau's Canada to the border invasion to what's going on in Africa right now, which seems to be descending into war. And what's happening in Serbia, what's happening in France. So we try to keep our pulse on as many big stories as we can that the mainstream media is totally ignoring. We've got a big story on the U.S. border invasion that we're going to talk about. I didn't see the mainstream media covering this part of the story at all, which is a blueprint has emerged, actual documents. Journalist Anthony Rubin is going to be here from Muckraker, who's been doing amazing work. And these documents basically show an exact blueprint on how to invade and evade authorities in the United States so the border invasion can unfold. We're going to talk to Anthony in just a second. Wait until you see these documents. It's unbelievable. So stay here for that. But first, anyone can find anything on the internet. That's why we want to thank our friends over at Aura for sponsoring today's show. I mean, it's unbelievable the information that is available and accessible for data brokers, and they really, really, really prey on older people, and that's so troubling. You know, sending links to your email account and hoping that you'll click a link that is not authorized or is not from the appropriate sender that you thought you signed up for, phishing attacks, sending you text messages and having you click links. By the way, never, ever, ever click on a link on your phone from a number you don't recognize. That is the easiest way for these hackers to get into your devices. Do not ever do it. They know this exploit. The Israelis invented it. So they're very, very good at hacking into phones. So please don't ever do that. And Aura is fully aware of this. And you can actually try it for free for 14 days by going to aura.com/redacted. And you can actually see how much of your personal data has been hacked and is being sold by data brokers on the dark web. All you need to use is our URL on your screen there, aura.com/redacted, or there's a QR code on your screen as well. You can scan it with your phone and just go directly to the link that way. It's unbelievable. We had our, David, you remember this? We had our entire like Facebook account hacked. I don't even know how they got into it. One of our team members, somehow they must have gotten into it. It took us like 2 months to get the damn thing back for our business. It was a total disaster. And yeah, they're able to sell passwords and all of that stuff on the dark web. And Aura is not just a VPN. It's a password manager. It's a real-time credit and identity theft monitoring service. They have internet parental controls. Everything is built into Aura. And they will identify these data brokers that are exposing your information and automatically submit opt-out requests on your behalf. They'll even opt you out of junk mail and telemarketing lists. So go to aura.com/redacted. Again, that's aura.com/redacted. Well, don't worry. The United States southern border is secure and nothing to see here, according to Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas. Listen.
Tell us what the situation is on the border now, because in May, there were fears that we were going to be overwhelmed. What is happening?
So we have dispelled those fears through a very thoughtful, comprehensive approach to irregular migration to our southern border.
But the facts don't bear that out. In fact, in just June alone, border incursions were up a whopping 186% from last year, with a total of 144,000 plus southern border encounters in June alone. But don't worry, nothing to see here. And now we're learning that Chinese illegal aliens are handed documents before they illegally cross the U.S. border, which shows a blueprint of how to navigate illegally through the United States. Reporter Anthony Rubin broke the story at muckraker.com, and he joins us now. Anthony, great work on this, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, this is a remarkable story. So how did you learn about these documents that are being handed to these illegal immigrants as they come across the border?
Yeah, so the document that I exposed in particular, so first of all, I mean, they're getting a lot of different documents, but the one that we're talking about in this particular show right now is a document that I was sent by a Chinese illegal alien. And what it is it's a document that I believe to have been written by another Chinese illegal alien. If you read the document, it's on muckraker.com. You guys can go check it out. It was originally written in Chinese. I had it translated to English, and then the intro It mentions a woman named Ivy. It has her her WeChat contacts listed on the top, which I have redacted and took out just for safety purposes. But she wrote this whole document. It explains how to get from South America all the way to the U.S. border, you know, how much to pay smugglers and various other things. Very, very detailed. And then I would say probably 75% of the document, maybe about 150 pages, talks about how to exploit the U.S. asylum system and U.S. asylum law. And so this document was sent to me by a Chinese illegal alien who I met in the Darien Gap, who's now living here in Los Angeles. And he told me that it circulated among Chinese in various WeChat groups that they use to communicate when they're on the way up to the U.S.
And can you describe the type of people that are being handed these documents? We've heard reporting that they are military age men, mostly, who are coming through the Darien Gap on their way to the United States southern border. Can you describe the individuals who'd be handed these documents in order to illegally navigate the system?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with the Chinese in particular, yeah. So down in the Darien Gap, like you just said, a lot of these people are military aged men. So the audience can infer what that's all about. I mean, just some anecdotal evidence would be there's reports down there of some of these men after they've crossed through the gap and they get to one of the first camps. There's a hotel, you call it a hotel. It's like a one-star, five-star hotel for the Darien Gap. And in one of these hotels, it's right next to one of these migrant refugee centers. There are reports of them going to this hotel, buying a chicken, slicing open its throat, and drinking the chicken blood, which is a ritual of the People's Liberation Army. That's been documented down there. So, I mean, that's some anecdotal evidence that these people coming over here are definitely Chinese special forces or People's Liberation Army or, you know, whatever branch of the armed forces.
It's unbelievable. And I think some of our audience will be watching saying, no, this is xenophobia. This is, that's exactly what it is. But, you know, and I've seen it in our comments when we've covered this story before, people would say, I just can't believe it. I can't believe that there's an intentional invasion of the United States. I find it so hard to believe. What do you say to those people? You're watching it happen in Panama.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll shatter that right now. You don't have to listen to me. Don't listen to me at all. I'm going to point you to a UN document. You could read their papers. And if you don't believe that, then I don't know what to tell you. You could go look up. Everybody watching this can go look up the paper, Migration and the 2030 Agenda. That's written by the IOM, the International Organization of Migration, which is the migration arm of the United Nations. And it says in there, it calls these quote unquote migrants, which we can get to that in a second. That word, there's a misuse of that word going on, but we can get to that in a second. But it calls these migrants agents of development. And it says that the goal of migration in the 2030 agenda in this blueprint, it says that the goal is to facilitate, not to stop migration. So, I mean, it says it right there and you can read the whole document. I mean, it gets even worse. You could read the replacement migration document that was put out in, I believe, the year 2000, also by the UN, where it talks about different case scenarios for different countries, including the United States. And I believe for the United States, there's five case scenarios that it lays out. And one of them, there's almost a billion people that they show migrating into the US. It's absolutely insane. You guys can read these documents from the UN if you don't believe myself or Clayton.
Yeah, no, great point. So it's not hyperbole. You're watching these individuals, you're speaking to them, you're seeing these documents. And can you dive more deeply in? We just touched a little bit on what these documents actually say. And how can you point more specifically what sort of blueprint this is for these immigrants that are coming across the border? And also, you said that word immigrants being used in a wrong way. Can you explain what you mean there?
Absolutely. So the word migrant is being used in the wrong way.
Migrant,
and this
right.
started coming. I mean, the word migrant has been used for a while, but now apparently, you know, people that all these millions of people, 6 million people since Joe Biden has been president, have crossed into the United States illegally through the southern border. And we call these people migrants. That's not a migrant. What is the definition of migration? It's like a seasonal thing, right? Like a migratory animal will go to a certain place, to some watering hole, or just to feed on some, you know, on something for a part of the year, and then they'll go back to where it came from. These people aren't going back. These people are illegally immigrating into the United States, and they're here to stay. So we need to call it as is. We need to say the word illegal immigrant. That's what it is. That doesn't dehumanize these people. That's just calling out the crime that's committed when you don't come through a port of entry into the United States.
Would you say that this is a national security threat to the United States?
I think that goes without saying. You know, one of the things that people need to stop doing when it comes to this issue is trying to qualify their statements. You know, I see people in discussion groups and on Twitter. And yesterday I was in a Twitter space. And, you know, people are trying to qualify their statement and they're saying why this is a problem and why they're not a racist because they're talking about this. Like, you don't need to even discuss that. I mean, you see it with your own eyes, what's going on. You see these hundreds of thousands of people pouring in here every month. It's an invasion. I mean, it fits the definition of an invasion. So you need to call it out as it is and be very appropriate with your, not let the devil take your tongue, because that's what's going on here. People don't want to talk about it because they're worried about being labeled a racist or a xenophobe or whatever. And then even then they won't call it as it is. They won't say it's illegal immigration. So it is a national security threat. You have to say that outright. 80,000 Chinese nationals have crossed into the United States over the last 2 or 3 years. Out of that 80,000, listen, you only need a few of them to go take out a power station or blow up a warehouse or do a number of other things, or just go steal critical intelligence. Hey, go get a job at X, Y, and Z, send us intelligence from there, or, you know, wait for the command and start sabotaging the place. One thing I will say, and this is also interesting, and you guys could go see this on muckraker.com in one of the videos I put out, is I interviewed a Chinese illegal alien that I met in the Darien Gap who is now living in the United States. And I talked to him, and he told me that it's known within their circles that the CCP police are here in the United States. And if you speak out against them, they will show up at your house and threaten you with arrest. And if they arrest you, they'll kidnap you back to China. So, and this was told to me by a Chinese illegal alien that's here now, and they know this in their circles. So even if some of these people are coming over here and they're good people, you know, they don't want to commit any sort of acts of sabotage or whatever, if the CCP police somehow find them and say, hey, you know what? I mean, your uncle such and such is going to be in trouble unless you do X, Y, and Z. There you go. That's the national security threat. But yeah, this is all about Agenda 2030. This is all about dissolving the sovereignty of the United States and changing our republic as we know it. That's what this is.
When you hear Secretary Mayorkas saying that the Biden administration has a, quote, very thoughtful, comprehensive approach to irregular migration to our southern border, end quote, I mean, what exactly does he mean?
It's a joke. And this is what I'm saying about it's kind of in the same vein as qualifying statements. It's like they say these things and then we debate, well, is it true? What does he mean by that? No, it's a joke. It's propaganda. It's like Soviet Union Pravda level propaganda. I mean, there's nothing to that. Again, all you got to do, anybody watching this, honestly, everybody watching this, if you're interested, just take a trip to the southern border. That's how I got started doing this. Just go show up. Go to McAllen, Texas. Go to El Paso. Just drive along the border. You'll see it happening very easily. Go talk to a Border Patrol agent and go say, hey, you know, just tell them you're a journalist. They don't know the difference. You don't need a special credential or anything. And say, hey, I'm a journalist. I want to go find some crossers. I want to see some action. Can you tell me where to go? They'll tell you exactly where to go. Go to Yuma, Arizona. Another one. You just wait there. And you'll see it happening. And then you will see very quickly that this is a propagandist lie.
Are you seeing other national media there? It seems like they kind of come in waves and then they disappear. In June, we had a record number of people coming across the border. I didn't hear any mainstream media coverage of it. When you're down there, do you see a lot of reporters from mainstream media organizations covering the story?
No, I don't actually. I would say, I know there's the one gentleman, I think his name is Bill Malusian from Fox News. He's a mainstream guy. Other than that, it seems to be mostly independent people showing up down there. I've seen the Epoch Times down there. But yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, that's just on the southern border. If we were to go further into the Darien Gap, I think it's a handful of people that have been covering that. And I would say that's, you have to understand that to understand what's going on here, because these people aren't just spawning at the southern border and crossing over. The Darien Gap is, you know, kind of the beachhead of this whole invasion.
And I'll get you out of here on this. If you could explain to our audience the Darien Gap, we've covered it extensively here on the show, but I'd love to hear your take on it. And it seems like a number of international organizations have set up what you want to call them camps. You want to call them sort of waypoints. You want to call them, I don't know, hospitals, service centers right there in the Darien Gap with buses and nonstop bus routes right to the United States border and handing them medical kits and handing girls, young girls, pregnancy kits and all sorts of things. When you're there, who are you seeing? Where are these people coming from, and how exactly are they getting to the United States?
Yeah, I mean, so in short, what the deal is down there is you have the entire world, over 100 different countries flying to South America. They're flying to Quito, Ecuador, because over there it's very easy entry requirements. Anybody can get into Quito, Ecuador. Then they illegally cross into Colombia. And by the way, this is all written in that translated Chinese document if you want to read it to your audience.
So this is part of the blueprint. This is detailed in the blueprint. Yeah.
this is detailed in the blueprint. And all these people know, all these people somehow know from 100 different countries know exactly what to do. So, you know, I mean, there's a Chinese blueprint. I'm sure there's blueprints written in every language that people have put together and sent through these groups. I mean, you could find these smuggling groups on Facebook and whatnot. It's very easy to find, but we're not going to get into that. So anyway, what happens is the whole world is flying into Quito, Ecuador. Then they cross illegally into Colombia. And then they trek through the Darien Gap, which connects North and South America, a very thin strip of land. And that's lawless jungle. And I'm here, so we'll shatter a myth right now, the idea that this is some sort of humanitarian operation. Before these people go through the jungle, they're handed by the IOM, the International Organization of Migration, the migration out of the UN, like we mentioned. They're handed what I would call a rape kit. I'm not sure what they call them, but these kits have you know, male and female condoms, day after pills, and I believe whistles. And they're given these kits, and they're told, hey, you know, if you're raped in the jungle, at least you got this kit. They're pawns is what they're using them as pawns. They just want to send them over here in numbers. If some of them get taken out or raped in the process, they don't care. So there you go. Just shattered the myth that this is about humanitarianism. But then they cross into Panama. And then once they get into Panama and they make it through the jungle, they're greeted by the UN and associated international agencies such as the Red Cross, the Norwegian Refugee Council, Doctors Without Borders, and a number of others. And they're actually given, for example, maps. I have right in front of me a map from the Red Cross that details the whole route to get from Panama to the U.S. border. I mean, multiple different routes and multiple different entry points. And it has about 200 different stops that are friendly to illegal immigrants where you can stop and charge your phone and get food. And then they're also given, you know, various aid packages and sent on their merry way to the United States. And that's what's going on. And it's a whole staging point, basically, where they can recuperate, get instructions and materials to then ultimately make their way all the way up to the U.S. border.
Unbelievable. Remarkable story, Anthony. I encourage our audience, we'll have it linked up, to go over to muckraker.com, read the reporting from Anthony and the team over there. This is really stunning. Has the Biden administration commented at all about these blueprints?
That'd be pretty cool. No, they have not.
Well, President Biden's on the beach for 10 days. So, you know, and I think that's, you know, where the priorities are right now for the next 10 days. Anthony, thank you so much. Thanks for the great reporting on this. We appreciate you joining us.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And I would encourage, if anyone, you know, I see most people agree with this and say, yeah, this all makes sense. I saw one or two people in the chat while Anthony was talking there saying, no, this, you know, BS. What part? Like the fact that this is actually happening, 186% increase over the past month, or BS that this is actually happening in terms of a blueprint that they're being handed. Go read the report, look at the documents yourself, and read what the United Nations has to say about it. So love to hear your thoughts on that. Let me know in the comments below.
All right. Well, we have more news to get you. We're going to get to you.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, we're going
You can go ahead with that.
No, I wouldn't tell him.
The words are not flowing.
Yeah, so Kenya, of course, is now coming forward saying, hey, you know, we're going to send thousands of people, thousands of helpful police officers to Haiti to assist with Biden's invasion of Haiti. The United States had been trying to find sort of a puppet government who would step in and send a military force to Haiti, because the United States doesn't really want to do it. They just want to facilitate the invasion in order to pilfer their resources and turn it into a de facto garrison state for the United States, where we can go in and take bauxite and all the other minerals that Haiti has. Sound familiar? So now Kenya is stepping in. I guess they want to get their hands on some stuff too. So we will cover that story in a moment.
All right, but first we want to tell you about our friends over at Lear, because it is no secret. If you're tuned in, then you know that experts are predicting a recession heading our way. Layoffs are already happening. Just today, CVS announced 5,000 people it would be laying off. The government is, of course, at the ready to print more money, further devaluing the U.S. dollar. While last year was terrible for most investors, 2023 could be even worse unless you were smart and invested in gold. Then you were protected from loss while other investments fell. If the experts are right and we do get hit with a recession, 2023 is looking even better for gold and silver investors. If you're interested in investing in gold, then our friends at Lear will help you start purchasing precious metals or converting part of your IRA or 401k into a gold and silver IRA. So call Lear Capital today at 800-613-613. 3557 or go to LearRedacted.com. Right now, if you buy 1 ounce of gold, Lear Capital is giving away a free ounce of silver. That's incredible. Literally free silver. You can keep it. You can sell it. Do whatever you want. It's yours. That's the beauty of metals. They are a lot of gold companies out there to choose from, and Lear Capital has over 25 years of experience, thousands of five-star reviews, and risk-free guarantees that give you 24 hours to review your purchase before committing to it. Lear Capital is a top choice when buying gold and silver, so call them at 800-613-3557 or go to LearRedacted.com and get your free gold and silver investor guide and receive up to $15,000 in free bonus metals with a qualified purchase. So to learn more, call 800-613-3557 or go to LearRedacted.com.
Well, the Biden administration has been looking for a puppet, a government, to do the bidding of invading Haiti on its behalf, looking for someone to lead this invasion. And now it appears the country of Kenya has announced that it will do Washington's bidding. Redacted correspondent Dan Cohen is going to break it all down for us. Dan, good to see you.
You too, Clayton. So basically, Anthony Blinken made clear earlier in July that the U.S. is looking for someone to do the job. Here it is in Voice of America, not exactly Russian propaganda. U.S. actively seeking leader for Haiti force, Blinken says. So now Blinken has gotten his wish. He's got to be thrilled with the announcement. Alfred Mutua, the Kenyan foreign minister, announced that at the request of the Friends of Haiti Group of Nations, whatever that is, I don't know what the Friends of Haiti Group of Nations is, but he wrote this on Twitter. Kenya has accepted to positively consider leading a multinational force to Haiti. That will consist of 1,000 police officers, he says, to lead what has been branded as a multinational effort to reinforce the Haitian National Police. Now, Mutua says the Kenyan police will deploy an assessment mission within the next few weeks to determine the mandate and operational requirements of the mission. Blinken's puppet prime minister in Haiti, Ariel Henry, who was never elected, he was selected by the United States, and he also happens to be a top suspect in the murder of President Jovenel Moise in July 2021. He was also very happy with the announcement. He called it an excellent development. So this entire arrangement, this invasion, is contingent upon the UN Security Council approving plans pushed forward by the United States and the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres to invade Haiti. So on July 14th, the Security Council unanimously approved a resolution calling on Guterres to outline the full range of support options the United Nations can provide to enhance the security situation. These include additional training for the Haitian National Police, support for a United Nations multinational force, or a possible peacekeeping operation. So sort of all options are on the table. If that multinational force is approved, Kenya would apparently be the primary contingent of personnel. But it's not the only African country to announce its support for a Haiti invasion. Paul Kagame, the dictator of Rwanda, who's a very close ally of the United States and Israel, he said that on July 5th, he said that he would send his forces. The Caribbean countries of the Bahamas, Barbados, and Jamaica have also pledged their support for an invasion. And what's really amazing about this, Clayton, the Kenyan foreign minister, in his announcement, I'm going to quote him directly. He says that Kenya stands with persons of African descent across the world, including those in the Caribbean, and aligns with the African Union's diaspora policy and our own commitment to Pan-Africanism, and in this case, to reclaiming of the Atlantic crossing. So it's like propaganda to portray this invasion, which is very clearly an initiative of the United States, as some kind of act of solidarity among Africans and African diaspora, and is even a rebuke to the African slave trade. Keep in mind, the Haitian Revolution initiated the collapse of slavery in the West. So that's who they want to invade. And Anthony Blinken is just gathering African leaders and you know, Black leaders in the Caribbean to do it for him, to carry out this invasion. So the irony is just over the top. At the same time, there's an effort to ramp up propaganda domestically in support of this Haiti invasion. This is from Ian Bremmer, the liberal interventionist think tanker.
This clearly is a case where the G7 as a whole, plus concerned members of the global south, need to come together and actually have a peacekeeping force, need to be providing a level of rule of law and accountability, and also need to shine a light on this issue. And frankly, the only way that's going to happen is much more pressure. I know a friend of mine, Richard Engel from NBC, is planning on going over there and starting some coverage soon. I think that will be helpful. The major mainstream media on the left, on the right, in the U.S. and internationally needs to be sending more correspondence.
Clayton, I don't know if you remember back in 2012, Richard Engel, the NBC correspondent, he was actually kidnapped in Syria for 5 hours, not for very long, but it was by a faction of the Free Syrian Army, the CIA-trained like mercenary groups. And then he and NBC blamed his kidnapping on the Syrian government, the enemy of the U.S. They completely falsified it. The New York Times even reported about it. So that's the guy who's about to go pump out some war propaganda in Haiti.
It's amazing because you literally have Ian Bremmer saying, hey, correspondents, journalists from these major media organizations that we usually lean on, the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Associated Press, to foist propaganda on people, get ready. Get ready to deploy journalists to Haiti to start covering this on our behalf, is basically what they're saying. And then this week, we also have the United States ordering non-essential embassy families and personnel to get out of Haiti. So they're laying the groundwork for this.
Exactly. And there's also a kidnapping that just reportedly took place of an American aid worker and her daughter, I believe, in Haiti, which I'm not saying it didn't happen, but there is a lot of speculation that those kinds of kidnappings are planned, premeditated as pretext for the U.S. to carry out this invasion. Like there has to be some kind of humanitarian mission. And again, there's no proof of that, but that sort of speculation always exists. And in, what was it, in 2021, I believe, might have been 2022, there were 17 North American missionaries, 16 Americans and one Canadian, who were kidnapped by a group called the 400 Mauzo, a criminal armed group. And, you know, you had like Adam Kinzinger and these fanatical neocons going out into the media and saying, we have to, you know, do our military has to, you know, be ready to go in there and carry out some strike. And there was speculation then too. So the timing is a little bit, I don't know, interesting,
suspect.
I'll say,
suspect.
Of this right. Latest kidnapping. I'm not saying it's not completely real or, you know, that these people were not genuinely, legitimately kidnapped, but, you know, can't help but wonder, you know, to your point about Ian Bremmer saying explicitly that we need to basically send in correspondence to manufacture support consent for war. It's the same thing that the U.S. ambassador, the former U.S. ambassador to Haiti, Pamela White, wrote in the Washington Post last year in December of 2022. She wrote that the media, especially televised media, should report on Haiti's crises, show gang brutality, highlight people clinging to rafts made from rotted wood, make videos of dehydrated, choleric children fighting to live. We need to send in 2,000 armed law enforcers who can protect the people attempting to deliver aid. So, I mean, she's very explicit in her description of what exactly she wants the mainstream media to broadcast in order to get domestic support for this Haiti invasion. So they're just going to broadcast horrible, sad images to tug at the heartstrings of liberals who will, you know, go in and who will watch this and say, oh, we have to go in and fix this. Meanwhile, it's fundamentally Haiti's problems are fundamentally caused by the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we've seen from the Facebook files and the Twitter files, Jim Jordan's Facebook files last week and the Twitter files from Elon Musk, exactly how the Biden administration loves to assert its media muscle on these companies. I'll get you out of here on this, Dan, which is this Voice of America piece that you're talking about. The headline of this reads, Haiti welcomes Kenyan offer to lead multinational force. When it says Haiti welcomes this invasion, Who in Haiti specifically is welcoming this?
Yeah, I mean, they're purely talking about the de facto regime of Ariel Henry and his, probably they're quoting the foreign minister, Jean Genius. But Ariel Henry is the prime minister only because he was anointed by the core group led by the United States, the core group, United States, France, Canada, the kind of neocolonial masters of Haiti. He was never elected. He's not an elected official. He was never put to a vote. And, you know, there's talk about elections. So when he said, when they say Haiti, they say our puppet. It's like, you know, the little puppet on the string says, oh yes, thank you for, you know, offering to send your troops. Very much appreciate that. That's who they're talking about.
Right. Exactly. Well, we were wondering when this invasion was happening. It's probably happening while President Biden is asleep on the beach for the next 10 days. And he has the Kenyans to do his bidding for him. Dan Cohen in Washington for us. Great to have you back. Thanks so much, Dan.
Thanks a lot, Clayton.
Again, thanks so much, Dan. And such an incredibly important story that no one is covering. Absolutely no one is covering this story except the propaganda arm of the Biden administration, which is pushing a totally different narrative. So thanks for Dan's great reporting on this, continued great reporting on Haiti. And thanks to all of you for being a part of our great community here. You know, we have a VIP community. We call it our Redacted Rebels VIP community. If you want to come over and join the rebellion, you can, and you can support independent journalists like what we're able to do here by having Dan on the show and other independent journalists. We are not funded by any billionaires. We are not like CNN. We're not like Fox News. We don't have Rupert Murdoch's or anybody else funding our operation. We don't have Pfizer. We don't have Moderna. We don't have any of that. We just have you, and that's all that really matters. So if you guys want to come over and support independent journalism for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can do that. Just go over to redacted.inc, and there on the right side of your screen is the community button. You just click on that, and again, for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can support what we do here. We get access to exclusive content, live streams, Natalie's book club launching here once the summer wraps up and we get back into the swing of the fall. We've got a lot of stuff that we're really excited about and planning for in our Redacted Rebels VIP community. So come on over, support the show, if you'd be so kind, and sign up become a rebel. We'd love to have you there. And thank you guys so much for joining us here on this Tuesday. Great to see all of you. And we'll be back here tomorrow on Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. We will be live, as always. So please join us tomorrow. Bye, everyone.